I just also want to acknowledge Don Wiggins in the house, you know, the cousin of Oscar Grant. You know, thank you for coming. So now what we're going to do is we got a panel going. I want to bring Jack Bryson, Martina Davis, Chairman Friend, and Minister Keith to the stage. And we're going to talk about some of the organizing that's going on around the country around issues of government and police terrorism, and also issues that are going on right here in Oakland, particular to the Oscar Grant case. So just give us about 2 minutes. Together to talk about some of the organizing that's been going on. The people that we have up here are very distinguished around the country in terms of organizing on behalf of our people. Jack Bryson is the father of two of Oscar Grant's friends that were with him on the platform when he was murdered. Minister Keith has been organizing around police terrorism. I know Minister Keith half my life, and he's been doing stuff in the community. Martina Davis is the sister of Troy Anthony Davis, who's on death row in Georgia. And, you know, we thought it was important to bring her out here in particular so that we don't think that this is just about Oscar Grant, or think about that this is just one case of the system going wrong or something like that. This is something that goes on all the time, particularly with our people, but other oppressed people too, but black people for sure. So we got Martina here. She came away from Savannah, Georgia, and she's going to talk to us a little bit about the case of her brother. Then we got also Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. He's the chairman of an international organization, the Prisoners of Conscience Committee, and we fight government terrorism all over the world, not just even in this country. So he'll talk a little bit about that. But since we have Martina Davis, who came as far as she did to be with us today, I want her to talk a little bit about the history of her brother's case, Troy Anthony Davis, and you will see the relations to the Oscar Grant case and other cases of police terrorism right here in Oakland. But this is right there in the South in Savannah, Georgia. So Martina Davis, y'all give her a round of applause.
My name is Martina Davis Correa, and like JR said, I'm the sister of Troy Anthony Davis. I'm very humbled to be here because I've talked to JR on the telephone I don't know how many times, and actually I'll be getting to visit some of the death row inmates here in San Quentin, so that's going to be exciting for me. For those of you that don't know about the case of Troy Anthony Davis, my brother Troy Davis has been incarcerated since 1989. For the murder of an off-duty police officer in Savannah. And Troy was actually downtown playing pool with some other people, and a homeless man was being attacked by a drug dealer who was known to be a police informant. And actually, Troy, who was 19 at the time, and a 16-year-old, tried to intervene and help this man. A gun was turned on my brother, and nigga, you don't know me, get out of my business, blah, blah, blah. And so they left the scene. Well, an off-duty police officer came out to try to help the homeless man later and was shot and killed. Nobody knew what happened. Nobody knew who the shooter was. The witnesses were identifying someone else that's bright skin, tall, slender. You know, Troy's darker than me. Left-handed shooter, Troy's right-handed. Well, the next day, the drug dealer went to the police department with a lawyer and said, if you give me immunity, I'll tell you what happened. They didn't know what happened, and he said a boy named Troy did it. And he lived in this subdivision over such and such a place. Well, when they came and they blanketed our subdivision looking for a boy named Troy, and Troy was actually home for the weekend, so he was actually working in Atlanta. And so 2 days later, Troy found out they were looking for him. And so he said he was going to come back and, you know, go in for questioning, and they'd see his mistake and they'd let him go. Well, to this day, they never questioned my brother about the crime. Police never interrogated him. They asked him where was his gun when he walked into the police department. He said, I don't have a gun, and they gave him his preliminary hearing date. And from that point on, they crucified my brother in the press. We have one newspaper there. I was sitting back there telling Jack, I wish that we had events like this in Savannah. It just doesn't happen. Because Savannah is very beautiful. People talk about it all the time. But if you have an event like this, this building would be surrounded by police officers. And most of you would be in a lot of trouble when you left, because this is considered organizing. In my brother's case, there was no weapon ever found, no DNA, no ballistics, none of that. They used 9 eyewitnesses to testify against my brother. All of them were criminals. All of them had jail time, had been on parole, probation, whatever the situation. One young man that testified against my brother and said that he did it couldn't even read and write the statement that he signed. He said that he got tired of the police telling him what Troy had done, and they were threatening him, so he just signed the paper, and he signed it with an X. 16-year-old interrogated without a lawyer for 7 hours without parents, taken out of his house by 15, 20 police officers, and he said that he was threatened with accessory to murder. He just got tired of them badgering him until he just started repeating what the police officers wanted him to say. Well, 7 out of the 9 eyewitnesses have recanted their testimony. The 8th eyewitness said all he knew was that the shooter was left-handed and Troy was right-handed, and they still want to execute Troy. The amazing part about this is that my brother was put on death row in 1991. My family wasn't even allowed to be in the courtroom. And what the district attorney did was they actually put my family's name on the witness list, so that they said all witnesses had to be sequestered. But we weren't sequestered with the other witnesses. We had to sit outside on a stone bench. We couldn't even go into the courtroom. The only time we were allowed to go in the courtroom was to beg for my brother's life during the sentencing phase. So in 1991, my brother was sentenced to death and given an execution date. And from 1991 to 1996, he had no lawyer. Georgia is one of the only death penalty states where you do not have to have a lawyer for post-conviction appeal, and Georgia will not appoint you a lawyer if you can't afford it. So President Bill Clinton signed into law in 1996 the Anti-Terrorism Effective Death Penalty Act, and they made that retroactive 10 years to 1986. My brother's case happened in 1989. What that law states is that you have 1 year from your conviction to prove your innocence. So in 1992, when Newt Gingrich came into power as the Speaker of the House, he said they would use no federal money to defend death row inmates. So all the resource centers across the country were defunded. Where you had 10 and 15 volunteer lawyers, dozens of investigators, they had nobody to defend over 100 and some men on death row in Georgia. So what took place is from 1991 to 1996, Troy had no lawyer. The witnesses started recanting. Then the anti-terrorism bill was there, and what the courts are saying is, well, it doesn't matter that he may be innocent, because the 8th Amendment of the Constitution states it is not unconstitutional to execute someone who's innocent if the state feels they got a fair trial. So we are not fighting an innocence case. What we are fighting is a procedural bar that states that the court system does not have to listen to your innocence. And so we have been going to hearing after hearing after hearing. My brother's never gotten a hearing where somebody will say, okay, we're going to listen to this. They say, oh, well, this witness was not credible because they're a criminal. Well, they were a criminal when you used them to testify against Troy. 9 additional witnesses have come forward and said they either saw the shooting or the actual drug dealer, his name is Sylvester Coles, has confessed the shooting to them in detail. And they said that the only reason that he's confessing that he shot and killed a police officer is because black guys take responsibility for killings for street credibility. So that's what they're saying. So what we've been doing is my brother has had 3 execution dates in the last year. And he has come within an hour and a half of being executed. He's come within 3 days of being executed. And then the last time within 2 weeks before they stopped it. The Georgia Parole Board are all made up of police officers and prosecutors. And they're the ones that deny clemency in Georgia. We've had over hundreds, about 200,000-300,000 letters last year, and another 400,000 letters go to the parole board and the governor this year, and they still refuse to do anything about Troy's case. So there's people all over the world, including prosecutors, police officers, the Pope, former President Jimmy Carter, who actually reinstituted the death penalty in Georgia, who's saying that this is wrong, you need to give him a hearing. In Georgia's history, 100 years of having the death penalty, they've never had a case like this. But because a white police officer was killed, even the Fraternal Order of Police have been working very hard against Troy. They threaten me on a constant basis. I get threats from the Klan and everyone else. But it's really, you know, comical, because nobody comes in this space. I tell them, they can threaten me from afar, they can threaten me on the phone, they can threaten me in the email. But when you come in this space, you got a problem. And they never do that, because I'm not gonna back down from them. And they know that. So people ask me, how is it in Savannah? I walk freely. I'm not afraid of them. And I think they know that. And the thing about it is that Choice case has garnered international attention. I mean, the European Union, you have people in Japan, you have people in Africa, you have all these people fighting. But Georgia wants to remain dominant in what they're doing. We have dozens of men on death row in Georgia that don't even have a death sentence. It's been vacated, but because they have no lawyers, they're still sitting on death row. We have juveniles that were on death row. When they got rid of the juvenile death penalty in Georgia, they put them in a hole because they say that they don't deserve to be in general population. Nobody's fighting it. And I'm constantly fighting it, but I have to be careful of my fighting, because when I fight, they can cause problems and repercussions to my brother. When my brother was on death watch, instead of him having a $5 phone call, 50-minute phone call, what they did was they put him on a phone system that cost my family $9 a minute to call. You know, they put you in a cage and make sure that you're going to kill yourself so that they can execute you. And the thing about it is that every time Troy gets relieved, the prison, you know, comes down on him. And it's not necessarily the prison guards that work there, because they all believe in his innocence. It comes from the Department of Corrections, because it comes from the governor's office. So we have to deal with a lot. So the things that you're seeing with Oscar Grant and people like Oscar Grant, I mean, we've had two black men killed in the last year, one shot five times, 22 years old, point blank range, and the police said it's justified. He wasn't armed, didn't have drugs, he had his 5-month-old baby in the car. And they said they felt intimidated by him because they thought he was somebody else. Nothing's done. Another black man, he got out of jail one day, he didn't register as a sex offender. The next day, the police were at his house, and somebody broke in his house, they didn't identify themselves as a police officer, he took off running, he didn't know who they were, they shot him in the back, dead. Nobody's doing anything about it. And it's just really amazing, because my brother worries about me, because I'm always standing up. When I got the information about what happened to Oscar Grant, I don't even know, I think I was in D.C. or something, I don't know where JR contacted me, but anyway, when I got home, I immediately got to a computer, and before I really knew what was going on, I had my 14-year-old son with me, and so he was looking at the video the same time I did. And you don't know how disheartening it is to sit there and tell a 14-year-old black male that's watching somebody get shot in the back, that's unarmed, and he's asking me, why did they do that? And I don't have an answer. But what I do say is that the reason that they're able to keep doing this is because they keep us very separate. They try to harp on our differences so that we don't get together and we don't know how to be empowered to advocate and educate for ourselves. You know, this young lady was talking about Cop Watch, and I'm gonna tell you, Cop Watch, court monitoring is very good. But when you do that, you need to know what the ordinances are in your cities. And I guarantee you, there's ordinances in Oakland that's different than ordinances over in San Francisco and different than Berkeley. Because in Savannah, if three of us in here had on the same t-shirt, there's an ordinance saying we're in a gang. You know? And you have to be very, very careful, because you can all be standing there with shirts that say Cop Watch, and they can walk right over and arrest you. So you need to know your ordinances and you need to know what you're doing. But the thing about it is that you need to hold these lawmakers accountable, and you need to do things where we get smarter than they are. There are other people in our community. We may not win, but we have to run against these people. I mean, I was thinking about running for district attorney. I thank God somebody else ran, because my brother said, what happens if you win? And I said, yeah, Lord, what would I do? But the thing about it is that we need to have forums where you can challenge people. But there are police associations that will help you. The Black Police Association, Ron Hampton in Washington, D.C., they're not supportive of all this police brutality. And there's other organizations that will work to help you. So if you want to know more about Troy Anthony Davis, you just go to TroyAnthonyDavis.org. There's so much about his case. You can go to Amnesty International, Campaign to End the Death Penalty, and various other things. And we're going to be at a rally on Saturday down on the wharf, and I think Jack has given you flyers about it. But anything that I can do to help you, because we do, with Amnesty International, I have a national position with them, so we do have our, at our disposal a lot of national and international things that I can help you do. But people all over the world have seen the videotape of Oscar Grant. And one thing is, when you're videotaping, when you start videotaping, you always need to state your name, where you're videotaping, if you have a police officer's number on their car, a badge number, because you want to keep those things on the video, because you need to chronicle it and you need to have that as access. And make sure that you do that, and make sure that when you have people reviewing your videos, it needs to be a person that has legal mindedness, so you will know what you need to do with that stuff. And just keep it in chronological, you know, keep it in order, but don't keep it to yourself. You know, and you need to really, you know, do different things. But I just thank you for JR for inviting me, and I'm very happy to be here. And but the case of Troy Anthony Davis, we have shirts that we were wearing, and it just simply say, "I am Troy Davis," because of the fact that what happened to my brother and what happens to your brother, what's happened to Oscar, happens to everybody. And so, you know, my brother's name could be Oscar. Your brother's name could be Troy. You could be Troy. And so that's why that shirt just simply says, "I am Troy Davis," because it doesn't mean that you're on death row. But I tell people all the time, my name is Martina Correa, and I am on death row because that is where my brother lives. Thank you.